Hello, Peter Pearls listeners, and welcome to an early investigator podcast about maximizing relationships. In this podcast, you'll hear from three mentorship pairs. They will share their tips and tricks for a successful mentoring relationship, as well as thoughts on navigating tough conversations. This program is moderated by me, Jen Dawson, Peter's Associate Director of Education, and joining me are my guests, Dr. Don Eichenfeld, Assistant Clinical Professor of Dermatology at UCSD, and her mentee, Jennifer Sway, a soon-to-be fourth-year medical student at UCSD. I'm also joined by Dr. Cheryl Bayard, Pediatric Dermatology Fellowship Director and Assistant Professor of Dermatology and Pediatrics at the University of Cincinnati, and her mentee, Dr. Catherine Bridges, Chief Resident at the University of Cincinnati. And last but certainly not least is Dr. Yasmin Kakorian, Chief of Dermatology at Children's National Hospital and Associate Professor of Dermatology at George Washington University, along with her mentee, Dr. Needy Shah, an intern at George Washington University. Now, let's dive in to this roundtable discussion.
Dr. Kakorian and Needy, would you two like to go first and talk about your mentorship relationship?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm Yasmin Kakorian. I'm the chief of pediatric dermatology at Children's National in Washington, D.C. And I have had the distinct pleasure and delight of having Needy as my mentee now for I don't know how many years. Needy probably knows.
Over 3 years.
Since she was a med student at GW. And I'm going to definitely leave you to tell the story of how we came to be anyway. But Needy has been incredible, and it's incredibly rewarding to work with students and now residents like Needy who really take projects into their own hand and push them forward. And she brings me more than I could ever give back to her. And I'm so proud of her and was honored to put her, whatever, to do her cap thing at to do the hooding at graduation, and now to see her join us as a resident. So it's been a really nice relationship, and it's just going to keep continuing, and I hope we keep her in pediatric derm. So
yeah, thanks so much, Dr. Kakorian. That was very kind of you. I think briefly I'll just say, you know, it all kind of started with a cold email that led to an in-person meeting, and I still remember that day, and I always think back, I was like, oh my god, what a great day that I met Dr. Kirkhorn, because I never thought it would lead to so many opportunities, so many projects, so much learning together, and kind of where I am today. She's been my role model for everything, so I'm excited to be on this talk with her and kind of talk more about mentorship and being a mentee.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And Needy, I'm so glad that you brought up that it was a cold email. And I definitely want to come back to that because I think that's an important thing to discuss, especially from the mentee point of view. So I've written that down. We're going to come back to that. Dr. Bayard and Dr. Bridges.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Bayard. I'm a pediatric dermatologist at Cincinnati Children's Hospital, and I'm our fellowship director. And this is Catherine Bridges. She is one of our fabulous chief residents and is actually going to be coming on as faculty at Cincinnati Children's next year, even without having done a fellowship, because she is that good at peds derm already, just from all that she's done in her residency here with us. We have a pretty new relationship because I've only been at Children's for a couple of years, but we're working on some research right now, and we're really excited to have her come on board.
Yeah, I'll say that our relationship first started as more of a clinical one. And I think that just for me personally, as a physician who kind of sees themselves as a clinician at heart, and a lot of my research interests come from my clinical interests, I think over time I found that those relationships tend to be the most robust and rewarding, kind of finding people who are interested in similar clinical things as you and finding kind of thinking of fun, interesting projects from that. So we kind of now have been working together a couple of years, found some shared interest, and actually have a few things in the pipeline. I think we have too many ideas. Never a thing, but lots of ideas to continue to explore. So it's exciting. I've also had a few other relationships with some other mentors throughout the years with a few other different projects as well that have had Some of them have been very successful and some of them have not produced the results that they would like. But I think all of them have been really great experiences and really great learning experiences as well.
Let's see. Jennifer, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and you can talk a little bit about how you and Dr. Eichenfeld started working together and then we'll go to her when she gets on.
Sounds good. So I am I'm entering my fourth year of medical school at UCSD. And so definitely a lot lower in my training years than everyone else here. But I started working with Dr. Eichenfeld because at the beginning of my research year, or a little bit before, I kind of got the sense that pediatric derm was kind of where my heart lied. I just really liked my pediatrics rotation. I love working with kids. The little I knew about the kind of diseases and pathologies that you see in peds derm all really appealed to me. And so I figured why not reach out to the peds derm department and just see if they have opportunities. So kind of also a cold email situation. But I was lucky enough to be paired with Dawn Eichenfeld. And she has been just the most amazing mentor. I think even the way we first started working was very much like she saw that I was someone seeking mentorship very early in my training, you know, very eager to learn, but also very new to everything and just needed some guidance. So she really took ownership of that, reached out to me, said, hey, like, what are your interests? Let's work on some things. And so that's how it really got started. And I think over the past year that we've been working together, it's been pretty amazing to see our relationship kind of grow. I think there's been a mutual trust and respect kind of grow. And so, yeah, it's been really great working with her. But so we've done, she does a lot of clinical research as well as some basic science research, more translational because she's MD, PhD. And so I kind of help her with both. And it's been such a great learning process. So, yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So, yeah. Just hearing your stories has led me to think of so many other questions that, you know, I didn't even plan for. So I think first I want to go to Needy because I do want to come back to that cold email and how can you get started and how can you advocate for yourself as a mentee when you're brand new? You know, one of the things that we know trainees experience is this, you know, should I, shouldn't I? Is it too forward? You know, you don't want to be too shy. So, Needy, how would you navigate that?
Yeah, I think those are all very valid concerns. And I definitely was in those shoes as a med student as well. I think my journey was, you know, I had an interest in peds derm as well. And I actually came across some of Dr. Kirkorian's prior research. And I had read through some of those papers and I was like, hey, I'm looking for a mentor. She's around the area. And I had just sent a cold email asking for a in-person meeting to discuss more research opportunities. And, you know, I think I was a second year med student. I was nervous. I didn't really have much knowledge in research or dermatology. But I think the biggest thing that really got the ball rolling and expedited the process was I remember walking into her office and she, of course, has a very busy schedule. She's the chief at Children's and it's just a lot going on. But I think one of the things that helped is I walked in with a piece of paper that said, hey, here are my ideas. This is the area I'm really interested in. And there were very vague ideas. There were just a few lines like, I've done some research. I see this area is really good. I really want to look into eye pledge disparities. And my reasoning at that point was just like, I was on Accutane. I thought it was really hard to navigate the process. And I just said that. And then we kind of, it just led to this whole conversation of us, you know, talking about her difficulties with eye pledge, kind of what my experience was, what I've seen in the literature. And it just catapulted this whole process. And we were able to just stay in touch. And she said, hey, look into this more. Let's catch up again. And that was that. And I think since then, Dr. Kirkorian and I have published more than 10 plus papers in that department. We've written textbook chapters together. We've presented at conferences and it's just led to this whole process. And it's helped me navigate my kind of identity in dermatology as well in patient advocacy. So I think it just started with something so small, but being prepared and showing up that, hey, I may not know everything, but I have looked into things and I am willing to learn. I think that just goes a long way.
Yeah. And I think Needy, you know, is not even expressing the minimal amount of how much she took the ball and moved it forward. So definitely coming in with those ideas, or at least, I mean, we don't expect medical students to know that much. There are the rare ones that either they suffered from a certain condition and so have like a special interest or knowledge, or they just, you know, were PhDs and they studied, I don't know what. But the majority, really, that's not realistic. And you may just have an overall sense you're interested. But when you're as busy as we are and there's so few of us, it's not really realistic to be like, I want to do something. You know, like I don't have projects that are just like hanging on my wall that I want to get out. Maybe some people do. That's not how it works with me. And so coming in with something that we can kind of build on is useful. But more importantly, like Needy really brought so much to the table on this like kind of cockamamie, like iPledge is annoying. And we like turned that into a million publications because she really hit the books. Like as soon as we had the kernel of an idea, she did these lit searches and came in like, well, I found XYZ thing. And I've said this on previous webinars, but with like the paper we did where we showed pharmacy disparities, I was like, I've seen maps in some journals where they like geocode stuff. How do you do that? And she like brought me a geocoded graph. And I still don't know how she did it. I mean, the software exists, but she figured it out. So I think for people like me, at least, and I'm not all mentors are like this. And I know Dawn, who's a scientist, it's going to be very different, like in the lab and that kind of mentorship. But I just cannot be driving the ball forward with micromanagement, and I'm not going to do it. And it's not realistic. So people who are really driven and can bring a lot to the table, then I can really can bring more back. So then when you have a really good product, it's a lot easier to work on. So when students get a case report even, and then they do a really good job, the title page is the way, things that I think is basic common sense. Like you have instructions from the journal. How have you not followed them? Like that already, you're already irritated me. But if the basic stuff is there and I'm editing primarily for content and so on, then we can push that forward well. And then the last thing I'll say, because I want the other people to talk, is I think bringing forward like a good product, you know, like I don't, spelling errors, grammatical errors, like it just, that's not something I would bring to a mentor. So I think that that is very important. Like, doing your best. And then lastly, I ignore the majority of emails I get. So the people who tend to be successful, you know, are very on top of bothering me, but in an effective, here's the draft. Hey, I got you the draft, whatever. So they're not annoying, but they follow up in an effective way. They bring in the work into my office. They want to meet with me and so on. So for me, that works well because I don't have like the bandwidth to set up like a weekly meeting where I have students come in. So I'll say that.
Yeah. So I definitely, and I know this, Dr. Krikorian, from when you spoke to the mentorship group, you definitely promote your mentees in bringing well thought out ideas and in moving projects forward. And I know that's definitely one style of mentorship. And I wonder, Dr. Bayart, does your style of mentorship differ from that? And if so, how?
Yeah, so I think that there's definitely some overlap in that I am not a micromanager either, partly because I don't personally like to be micromanaged, and also because I just don't have time to micromanage people either. So I definitely really find that people who are motivated and who are moving the ball forward, it's really helpful on my end as well. I haven't had as many mentees come in with specific ideas of what they want to work on, which is actually completely fine with me because I have a running list of things, kind of like Catherine was mentioning. We both, you know, projects that we've done and that we've gotten interested in, it's usually based on clinical observations. Like, hey, we just had 3 of these cases that are really similar, you know, we should write this up. And this happened pretty recently. And I had a medical student that emailed me and said, look, you know, I have done a bunch of research at Children's, which was a big seller for me because he already knows what he's getting himself into and knows about the logistics of how things work in our organization. And, you know, I really am interested in Derm and I would love to work with you. You know, do you have any projects that you're looking for somebody to move forward? And so we looped him in as well. So I think that that is a totally fine thing as well. And I think as a trainee, it can be, you know, I think, Needy, it's really admirable that you had ideas of what you wanted to work on, because I think without the context of seeing patients and working in that field, I think it's really hard to develop your own clinical questions. So I'm okay with people not necessarily having their own questions as long as they're willing to work hard and move things forward once we get into it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Like, in reality, that makes the most sense. We are doing that now as a division, creating a running list. So our kind of vision is to have these small projects like case reports and what have you sort of as a trial run. Like, if you can handle this, then we can sort of build on that. And I think that will long term, like for so long, it was just me and Kai and we just had no bandwidth. As we expand, that becomes more feasible. Also, as you build your research program, and again, I'll point towards Dr. Eichenfeld and her mentee here. But, you know, I think science is very different. But in clinical practice, a lot of it is like, in clinic, I saw this and so on. And so now that Colleen is going to have an HS clinic, it's going to just naturally spin off hundreds of small projects within the context of the specialty clinic. And same thing for Kai with her vulvar derm clinic. And that's a nice way for med students to get involved, to bite off a small piece of a longitudinal project. But at the same time, I think it's very important that we as mentees can give them a product. Because if you just work on getting some data, but then you never have a publication, like there has to be a quid pro quo to some extent. Because even if you guys are all noble and want to be peds derms, which we want you to be and we love you, you still have to get into residency to be a peds derm. And you have to have publications and you have to have more than like, I put a poster. That's not sufficient. It has to have like an end product. And almost always the end product needs to be a publication, and a case report's really not enough. It's one thing, but not enough. And so I think it can start with those projects, and that's a great entree point, especially if people have a running list. And then that helps us kind of get to the next step, but you need the next step too.
Thank you both so much. So I want to shift gears a little bit, and I want to get into the sticky stuff, the stuff that's a little uncomfortable to talk about. And I think, Catherine, if you don't mind me putting you on the spot first, because you did very eloquently put that some of the relationships, mentorship relationships you've had haven't produced the results that you were hoping for. So let's talk a little bit about that. Let's talk about, you know, how you navigate a conflict with a mentor and vice versa, how a mentor navigates that with a mentee. But Catherine, let's start with you. Like, what is your approach if a relationship is sort of going off the rails? Like, how do you approach getting back on track?
Yeah, I think that it can be difficult. I wouldn't say that I've had a relationship where anything ever ended in poor terms, anything like that. I'm still great friends with everything. But I think, especially as a medical student, in case there's any medical students on the call today, who maybe are doing away rotations, for example, where you know, it's not as easy to follow up with people in person. There's been times where, you know, I remember, you know, I was on an away and I wanted to do a case report or this or that just to try to help bulk things up, show I was interested, and kind of completed that on my end. And then, you know, they weren't able to get to the completion within my very, very short 4-week period to get back, you know, with me with any edits. And then at that point, you know, you're trying to do things from abroad. This is pre-COVID, so I don't think people were nearly as good with Zoom or things like that. And so I think it can be challenging, as even somebody's mentioned, kind of translating work that's done always to a publication, either from kind of the initial thought to a publication or from a poster to a publication, from the edits perspective. And so I think that, you know, you can always try to do your due diligence and trying to call them and follow up and things like that. But I think the farther I've gotten in my career, the more I definitely appreciate how many time constraints that people have. And so I think kind of trying to set deadlines with people, you know, hey, I'd like to get this You know, when would you like to see this done by? So that you guys have your expectations on the same page. And then even with revisions, like, hey, when do you want revisions to be done by? When are you going to get back with me with revisions? And I think that that can sometimes be helpful in moving things along as well. And I think that that really has been, I think, the only sort of snafu that I've ever had working with others is trying to kind of move things forward. And so I think even with myself, if I'm working with somebody or if a medical student's trying to work with me, I think I personally just try to really remember those experiences. And then, you know, if I don't have the bandwidth to do a project for 6 or 8 months because I have too much going on, you know, it's making sure that before I get involved, you know, with Dr. Bayard or with a medical student or this or that, I can really help to make sure that everybody gets to their end goal. But sometimes that can be challenging, especially when you have relationships that aren't in person. They're kind of, you know, in different cities.
Right. And, you know, so much of us now are separated. And even if we are in the same city, it's hard to get FaceTime with each other. So I like the idea of just being very transparent with your timelines. I feel like that's a great takeaway from that. And Jennifer, I want to give you an opportunity here. How you are, obviously, as you mentioned, the younger trainee in this group that we're just talking about now. So as a medical student, how do you advocate for yourself or navigate those potential conflicts?
Yeah, like everyone said, this is a difficult subject. I think I've been pretty lucky with my mentors, where I would say most people who are willing to mentor med student are well aware of the demands of it and are aware of like what's needed to succeed in this field. And so that's always in the back of their mind is what I've noticed. And if, you know, that's not something they're open to, then they won't even really give you the opportunity to work with them. So I haven't had a ton of experiences where I really felt like I needed to push my own needs and my own agenda just because I felt very supported. I think the main thing that other people have already touched on is just time constraints. People are so, so busy. And like, I know that my little project is probably important to them, but not as important to many other things they've got going on. So I think it's like a fine balance of like pestering, but in like a respectful way. And I think that in my experience, that everyone's really appreciated the reminders, you know, in moderation. I think that's a big thing. Also, just I firmly believe that like putting your heart into everything you do and taking ownership and just being proud of any work that you put out will ultimately lead you to where you need to be. I don't think that like going through the process, always thinking about, oh, what do I need to get out of this? What are my needs? Like, I think that's a really unfulfilling way and ultimately like won't lead you to the most successes. So I think also just trust the process, really like go into it with the attitude that I'm just wanting to learn. I want to get my hands on things that really mean something to me that I care about. I'm going to put my 100% into everything that, you know, all the opportunities that are given to me. And I think just trusting that will end up in a product that you're really proud of, whether or not that's like a publication in a super good journal. And obviously, hopefully it is. But I think a lot of it is like, there is this mutual respect where, you know, you want to put your best foot forward for your mentor and you trust that they also want to do their best for you. So I haven't had a ton of, yeah, like I said, I haven't had a ton of situations where I felt like my needs weren't being met. But I think that's what I would have to say about that.
Needy, I saw you nodding quite a bit. What do you have to add?
No, I would just agree with everything that's being said. I think the biggest thing is being transparent and having an open communication. And I think as a med student, that's when I kind of started working on research projects. And you have a lot of other responsibilities yourself. And letting your mentor know that, hey, I have my boards coming up. I might be a little busy for the next month or so, but I'll be right back on track. Is it okay if we push this off? You know, I think just being open and setting those expectations from the minute that you know them and, you know, if something is happening. I think, like Jennifer said, the mentors are very respectful and they have been through this process and they, you know, they know that what you're going through, and vice versa, just having that respect for your mentor too, that they are busy. And I think friendly reminders, I would 100% agree with that as well, that it's completely okay to set friendly reminders. Everyone can read an email, be like, okay, I'm going to reply to that, or read a text and reply to that. And then you get busy or distracted and then you forget. If it's been a week, just send another email and be like, hey, I just want to follow up if you've had a chance to look over this. And that's perfectly fine. I think that's okay. But I think open communication is the biggest thing. That way, the other person doesn't think that you've just left and you're MIA and you both are on the same page.
Sorry, go ahead. Nidhi has done that I think will be valuable just to put out there for the people watching the webinar is that she has actually trained subsequent students like on multiple occasions. So if I've ever had people that want to work with me, I'm like, talk to Nidhi, and then Nidhi kind of sets them on their path. So she has been a mentor because she's kind of understood the process and so on. So that's a big deal. And I did want to put a comment about email out there. I just find it because I get hundreds of emails per day. And I'm quite avidly on my email, but yet it's still hundreds per day. That at some point it's hard to follow up on those emails as well as like verbal communication or in person. Like when a medical student is finally with me or resident, all of a sudden I'm like actually listening and we do the things that we need to do. So sometimes the email, if you're like not getting what you need on email, sometimes you need to kick it up to a text or even an in-person meeting if possible. That's not always feasible if you're remote or whatever.
So I want to kind of pose the same question to the attending side. Like, how as attendings do you manage potential conflict? I mean, this isn't your first rodeo. You've mentored countless students, residents, fellows over time. So I'm sure you're very adept at sort of heading those things off before they happen. But when they do kind of spring up, how do you handle those? I'll go to you, Dr. Bayart, first.
So as you alluded to, I think as much as you can prevent them, that's definitely optimal as opposed to ending up in these situations. So somebody had mentioned before, really clear communication about what the expectations are. Never assume that, somebody knows exactly what you're talking about, and setting up, just some fake or, self-imposed deadlines for yourself of, we're going to meet at this time and have this done by then, and this is the goal. And I would say the majority of trainees that I've worked with have really risen to the occasion and impressed me. I've had maybe a couple situations where people haven't followed through as much and kind of, disappear for a long time. And I'm wondering what's going on with the project. And I totally get that people are really busy, just like I'm really busy. And sometimes I am not the most on top of things. But I really use the same strategy as a mentor, if it's a mentee that has been, MIA, and just say, hey, I wanted to check in with this and see where you're at. And sometimes they, have had something big going on in their life. And so I'm certainly patient and understanding about that. But I feel like it's a really very similar strategy going the other way as well.
Dr. Kerkorian, any comments?
I feel like I'm like an avoidant personality, despite my directness and a seeming bluntness. I really dislike anything but positive feedback. So it's challenging for me. So I'm often the culprit. Like if the product is really poor, it's really hard for me to engage with it. Like if a write-up that somebody does and they're really earnest and they meant their best, but if it's super poor quality, not out of anything, they just don't maybe know, not everybody like learned how to write an essay or whatever. I have a lot of trouble, and I think Alona's on here, so maybe she can share her wisdom, but like I do not know how to deal with that. Like if it's like I have to rewrite this from scratch, I really find that to be very, very challenging. Like they're almost anything else can be dealt with. I do think timeliness is a problem. That's easier to be direct about. You can sort of set those expectations as sort of objective, like, hey, this was due at this time. We really need to move it forward. But the like work quality not being where it needs to be out of no fault of the person's own seems to me to be a difficult challenge.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that. Before we have a question actually that fits within this topic, so I'll ask that. But before I do, I want to go to Dr. Eichenfeld. Thank you so much. Poor Dr. Eichenfeld has been in a long clinic and she's just getting on and situated. So whenever you're ready, we'll have you sort of introduce yourself and then talk a little bit about, you know, just how things are with your relationship with Jennifer.
Well, yes, I just had a good learning clinic, but I'm John Eichenfeld. I'm a pediatric dermatologist at Rady Children's Hospital. I have worked with a couple of different people, like medical students and also residents and people of various types of training. I'm also early in, I'm not going to say training in morning because I guess I'm intending now, but I always think of myself still in training because we are learning every day. So I'm very early faculty. This is my second year. I've had the honor to work with Jennifer for the past years. I think Jennifer is amazing. She's stellar. She is very much a self-driven person. So she, and self-motivated. So you give her a project and she'll run with it. And you'll give her the wonderful thing is you give her projects of different types and she'll still run with it. It's like she has many, many different talents. So I feel very lucky to have been given the opportunity to work with Jennifer this past year.
Thank you, Dr. Eichenfeld. I appreciate that. So we've just been sort of catching up on how to navigate conflicts. And then we've talked about, you know, what makes a good mentee. And there's definitely been a theme on the call tonight so far where being driven and being self-motivated is super valuable. We were just talking about, we've been alluding to the fact that it can be tricky to get a hold of people and communication can be tricky despite best efforts. So an audience question is, what should I do if my mentor is just not responsive? And especially if you're waiting on that person to review time-sensitive items. So what are some pearls? What are some wisdom you all have to share for that? Do you want to go first, Dr. Eichenfeld?
So I will answer it both ways. So I think when I was a resident and fellow, I thought the best way to get a hold of my mentors was to be very persistent. I think no one's ever ignoring you. Like it's always because like they get like 500 emails and your email is one of the 500 emails and they're probably on email 3 or something like that. And that's like most of the time that's what's going on. And then trying to figure out if you have like a manuscript to review, like printing it out and trying to catch them at a time. Sometimes you have to catch them if like they're really busy, catch them at a time where they can review your manuscript. Like sometimes you'll be like, I'll print it out for you. Let's go over it right after clinic. And then they'll give you like, okay, half an hour, we're going to go over it together with clinic, like right after clinic. So good things like that. I think that's what I did when I was like a resident and fellow. Nowadays, I'm one of those people who likes to answer emails like right away. So I do try to answer, like I like to get it, like once I answer it, I can file the email somewhere and then I no longer have to think about it. So then like, because if I have to think about it, it's on my to-do list, then I have to do it. So that's what I like to answer my emails right away. If it's a to-do thing, I try to do it. And I hope I try hard enough to do it. And then if it's something I have to review, like it's I try to do it. It's like in a reasonable amount of time, or I'll try to like set up a meeting to do it or set up meet with my mentee to try to review something. And then I think like Jennifer's very good at catching me at times. And then I also like Jennifer and I text a lot. So I think that's like, I feel very comfortable texting her. I hope she feels the same, but we text each other a lot. And I find that sometimes like if you have a question that's more like urgent, not urgent, but like not like life or death, but things that are like, it's just easier to convey in a text message, like texting helps. And then and then I'll call her sporadically sometimes.
Yeah. I just threw off that. I totally agree. Like, I think there's a threshold where like, you just have to feel out what's text appropriate, what's email appropriate. And then like, I think we both do a good job just with the constant communication, texting so quick. that we both know what's going on. But then also, if some time has passed, I think Dr. Eichenfield's really good about identifying when, okay, we need to have like a real in-person or Zoom call to just like hash everything over, reset, make sure we're on the same page about everything. And then between those, it's just like constant texting. So yeah, I agree. That's our system. But
excellent. Does anybody else have anything to add on that topic? Well, we've got more questions to get through. Another audience question, and this is a good one. This actually comes up a lot with folks trying to get in touch with Pedra to see if we can kind of be a middle person to help with this. But for those people who don't have home dermatology programs, there's always a challenge in getting connected. And this member of the audience has said, you know, like cold emailing hasn't really worked for them. Is there a different strategy they should consider in trying to reach out to people who are not within their institution?
I will say at Cincinnati, we do often get applicants from programs sort of regionally that don't have dermatology residencies. And so those medical students are often kind of wanting to do projects. And the more successful situations I've seen is if you are planning on doing away, reaching out very far in advance to get a project started. It's very difficult. Once you're there, it really is a short amount of time. So to try to get there, identify somebody in a week, then try to get a project, and then you're trying to do things afterwards, and it can be difficult. Like I alluded to, you know, whenever, and I think we've all kind of said the same things where it does make it a little bit more easier if you are able to see them in clinic, ask questions. It can just help move things along timely, in a timely fashion. So I would say if you are planning on doing an away, you can always reach out to the program coordinator and say that you have some interest in doing a research project. And they, at least at our institution, kind of help to connect to residents or attendings. And so then you can get started on something before you come. And then maybe have it, you know, near completion or the idea by the time you get there so that you can nail down some of the more nitty gritty details or things. So I think that could be a good strategy to at least form a relationship in that way. I know that that's maybe not a good way. You know, that's obviously not a way to form a relationship if you're not, you know, doing aways or things like that. But if you are planning on doing an aways and looking for an opportunity, I would definitely recommend reaching out as soon as you have scheduled that away rotation.
Now, in that scenario, is that also, would you want to apply the same strategy as like Needy did, where she had a bunch of ideas that she brought forward? Would you also want to do that for away rotations, have some ideas prepared, or would you research that institution where you're going to be going to see what they're already working on? Like what would you recommend in your outreach?
You know, I'm not sure because I did not think of this idea whenever I was a medical student, but now that I'm a resident, there's been a few medical students who have been clever and to think about this idea and have reached out to the department beforehand. And I just thought that that was such a great idea. And I've noticed that those are the medical students who tend to have something to either a poster, a publication, or some sort of academic experience that they've been able to engage in at the end of their rotation. And so I will say at least the medical students that I've worked with just as a chief resident, that's kind of how I've heard about these situations. A lot of times they didn't have ideas and they were looking for projects. And then the residents had some case reports. Mainly it was always case reports, at least at our institution, that they hadn't gotten around to getting written up, and they were able to provide the medical student with all the information beforehand. And then they were kind of able to finalize the report on that rotation. So I'm not sure. These people didn't come with any ideas, but I'm sure that would have been a lot. I think that would have been also a good strategy. Pretty helpful. Look up people's bios, see what they're interested in, and maybe make a connection that way.
Go ahead, Jenna.
I know also, yeah, just to add a little bit, because I know that as a medical student, also the unanswered emails is a unfortunately very common thing. So just some things that I found that might help. One, like just by word of mouth, or if you know of people or departments that have a history of working with mentees and other medical students and are very active in the mentorship area and research area, I think that's a great place to start. I know that can be hard to figure out, but you know, if there are people in your program who have matched previously or have done research previously, I think they're a great resource just to, you know, dig a little bit more for information. I also think when emailing, it's really important to be specific and direct, and like maybe even include a CV in there before they need to ask you for it, or say like, these are my areas of interest, like whether it's peds, derm, or it doesn't even have to be specific, because like we mentioned before, not most med students don't have a ton of experience already, but just like what your potential interests in research are, like what your prior experience is. So I think the activation energy to respond to an email that's like, hey, I am really interested in research, like, let me know if you have anything available, is super high. Whereas if you have something really targeted and really have or demonstrate that you have a specific idea in mind of what that relationship might look like or what you're looking for, I think it's a lot easier for the potential mentor to decide if you are an appropriate mentee for them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Do any of our attendings want to respond?
So I'm not 100% sure of the situation from the way the question was written when they said they weren't getting responses from people in the community. I was wondering if they were, you know, dermatologists in private practice, not associated with an academic institution. And please correct me if I'm misreading the situation. And I think that these people can be awesome mentors, especially clinically. They're seeing so many patients and they can give you a great perspective on the field. But I think in terms of getting into dermatology residency, it is really important to have at least one mentor that is an academic. So if you don't have a home derm program, that may mean reaching out to somebody who's in academics at another institution. Maybe you would meet them through PEDRA or, you know, the Society for Peds Derm or another meeting like that. And the Society for Peds Derm, I believe, actually has some mentorship programs, and so does PEDRA, where they pair people up. So that can be a way to get paired up with somebody. And they try to do it based on interests and other factors. But I, as somebody who reviews a lot of residency applications for our residency program, I do sometimes get candidates that have, you know, their letters of recommendation are from community doctors who maybe don't work with other medical students and don't really work with dermatology residents. And so they're like, well, this is the best medical student I've ever worked with. She's really, really great. And I'm like, well, you know, do you really know what you're talking about, you know, as opposed to somebody who's working, you know, with, you know, 20, 30 medical students a year. So as somebody looking at applications, that is something that I do take into account, is the context of that. So and unfortunately, just the way that the field is, getting into residency is really competitive. And I think that also the flip side of finding somebody in academics, the other, you know, good thing is that they're really used to getting these kinds of emails and questions. And, you know, I think adding also, like, if you are, you know, too busy or you don't have the bandwidth to take me on, is there somebody else that you could recommend that I would reach out to? And that's an opportunity for, you know, the attending to pass along to maybe somebody else who's a more junior, less well-known colleague, but is going to be a really, really great mentor, and or somebody that may be a good match for you.
Yeah, not having a home derm program is a real challenge. It's not fair, but it's the way it is. And so I think that is where you really pragmatically need to be aggressive about these mentorship, formal mentorship opportunities. Women's derm, peds derm, ASDS doesn't really matter. Every society has, you know, like paid scholarships for mentorship. And that gets you a foot in the door, because if you have the mentors are part of it, and you actually get somebody who has committed to that program, and then you can actually get to them or through PEDRA or what have you. So I think for those who are outside, who do not have home programs, it's really going to be important. And I do think just for us as PEDRA, we should prioritize people without home programs for such scholarships and so on, because it levels the playing field and makes it much more fair.
A great idea. Yeah, I like that you have mentioned the support that the societies can offer. And this is, it's a beautiful segue into one of our other audience questions. Do you recommend attending the PEDRA annual conference if we haven't had the chance to begin our own research project yet? And I can answer that. Yes, come. We have travel awards available. It is a great place to meet people. And like we have been sort of saying all along, just getting 5 minutes of FaceTime with somebody can make all the difference. In fact, the majority of the people on the call tonight are people that I know because I've met you all at the conference. So it's definitely a great way to get involved. Come to the Next Gen Forum for medical students. If you're a resident and on up, you can come to the EI Forum. So Dr. Eichenfeld, I think you and I had talked about this very specific thing before in the past, so I'll let you comment here if you'd like.
I think it's really important. I think when you go to somewhere in person, you're going to meet a lot more people than if you just do it virtually. For example, what's nice about PEDRA is that there's a poster session where you get to walk around and talk to lots of people about their posters, and then you get to eat food and have a glass of wine, and then it's just nice. And then the posters are already sitting there. They're kind of a talking point. Like they're like a conversation starter. Oh, like tell me about this poster. Like tell me about your project. Like things like that. It's just very cool to be able to have like kind of a relaxed atmosphere to talk to people. So, and then aside from that, the PEDRA conference, like it's not like a normal conference in that the normal scientific conferences are you go and you learn about science. I think the PEDRA conference is more about you go and you learn about how to better pursue your science, I guess, or how to better start your science. So it's just a very different type of conference. And then there's like working groups where you kind of have small groups where you get to kind of like learn more about different projects that people are still working on or still like going to start talking about them. And it's just like, it's almost like a little brainstorm session. And you get to kind of see how projects start from the ground up. Because most of the time when we see projects, we're going to see them when they've already been fully established and published and all the little details have been ground out and you see only the nice part. And it's sometimes nice to see like the parts where, so that was not a good idea. There are lots of bad things, like bad ideas that happen before we get to the good ideas. I shouldn't call them bad ideas. It's more like just like ideas that need to be better refined.
Yeah, absolutely. And then what about our trainees? I think Needy, you've been to a meeting and I know Jennifer has. You've had good experiences. You've been able to network.
Definitely. So unfortunately, my meetings have been limited to virtual during the pandemic time. And then, of course, the 1 year that they were in person, I was an intern, unfortunately. But I think regardless, even in the virtual setting, being able to display your work and, I think there was a question I answer session and just being able to engage and learn about what's out there. I think that's a really great idea. And I would say like it kind of, encourages you and draws you to identify different parts of dermatology that you didn't know about, just, expand the horizon, see what you're intrigued in. And that way you can kind of look more into it. So just go in with an open idea and see what kind of draws you and try to learn more about that and see if that can lead into anything. And there's nothing wrong with reaching out to the person. You can look at who the authors were on that poster or something like that and even email them if you're not able to go in person and have that face-to-face conversation. And that could be a way to start conversation. Hey, I saw your project and I'd love to learn more about it. Do you have any other opportunities?
I didn't realize until I went to the conference, just how tight of a community pediatric dermatology is. As a fairly new member of it, sometimes I feel like I mean, not imposter syndrome, but like just a sense of like, I don't know where I fit into this community. And so like when I think attending the conference really made it feel like, yes, I'm a part of this community. I have the same end goal as all the people here. And then just like putting names to faces really helped. And also just like there are a lot of med students that go to the conference. So I think that's really valuable too, to talk with trainees from other programs, like what they're doing. They probably have the same struggles and feelings as you. And they're a really good soundboard too. So I definitely think that going to conferences, even if you're not presenting, is super, super valuable. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I actually went to PGR my fourth year on scholarship and had a couple of posters and kind of just wanted to echo what everybody was saying. It was a really good experience. People were really interested in what we were bringing. I similarly felt a little bit intimidated at the time because I didn't know obviously anybody there besides my mentor, but it was great to meet a lot of people and kind of hear all the ideas that were swirling about. And I think it is a great way to potentially meet some new mentors as well, based off of kind of some mutual interest.
I know we're getting very close to the end, but I do want to honor these last two questions that have come in so quickly. For mentors, what is enough for commitments? Is there an amount of time that a mentee should commit to a relationship before approaching a mentor for a project or a relationship? Like, what's the reasonable amount of legwork that should be done beforehand? Let's go to Dr. Eichenfeld first.
Okay, so I'll keep it a little shorter, but I'm not very short. Okay, so basically, I think that it depends on what your project is going to be. So if you are, you want to commit for what you're planning on doing with your mentor. So that's the main thing. So if you want to do a case report with your mentor, then you are committing for a case report. And that's not that much time, but it's a commitment. If you are committing for a retrospective study with your mentor, you need to, it's like a little, like, it's more flexible. You get to like, you can write it after clinic. You can like write it at night on the weekends. Like you can look at the chart on the weekends. Like it's more flexible. If you are committing for a randomized clinical trial with your mentor, that is more time intensive. That is like you are going to be there every single day, like all the time. If you are committing for bench work with your mentor, that's also time intensive. It's like a randomized clinical trial, but even more sometimes. I don't know. So it really depends on the type of work you're doing.
I agree with everything John said, unsurprisingly. I think you need to also figure out what the time commitment, like what your expectations are of your, like the mentor's expectations. So sometimes I don't care if you do the case report in 6 months, it's for you, but like, more recently, we presented a case of norovirus-induced RIME, and I was like, I want this out fast because other people may see this. I don't want to get scooped. So I basically told Eric, like, this needs to be done in 2 days. And can you do it? And he was like, oh, yeah, and he got it done. So that's not typical, but there are times where, you know, we need to be very communicating well. I wanted to just say something different about this comment because I think I didn't think the question might have meant, maybe I misunderstood the question, but it also depends where you are. If you're a first year, like Needy, I think you were a first year, maybe you were a second year, but you were early. We had this like enormous vastness of time in which to dream about, like, perhaps we can invent like a new planet, you know? That is not realistic for a person in the second part of third year. I know I keep being like Miss Pragmatic here, but you still are trying to get into residency so that you can be the doctor you dream of being. So it's a very different conversation with depending where the mentee is. Like, look, dude, if you need 5 publications in the next 2 months, then you're not going to do anything on the weekend except you work. Is that where you need to be? Or do you need to be thinking about taking a year off? So that's the kind of discussions that I have with mentees. If they're a first year, we can really do that dreaming big. And Dawn, you haven't talked about it at all, but you're like an actual scientist with laboratory type projects and translational research. So I don't know if you wanted to say something about, I feel like that's kind of a different kettle of fish.
I do. I know. I'm like a poor like everything because I'm pulled in so many directions. So I do very tiny amount of bench work. Jennifer did like all of my bench work this year. So that's kind of what happens because I have clinical duties and educational duties and children duties. And so like it's basically like Jennifer like did a lot of the heavy lifting. And so I'm very like, I don't have, I it's very hard. I think it's very hard to do a little of everything. And I am learning that day by day. But I also, yeah. So like, I think if you do bench work, I think most people who've done bench work understand that it's a very slow process. Like I've been working on a project that I started as a second year resident. So now it's like 4 or 5 years in the making. And my original mentor was Brian Sun, who is still an attending, but he's still my mentor. So like it's just like slow in the making. And
yeah. And so that was my trying to be my point. It's like if you come to Dr. Eichenfeld and you're like, I have 4 days and I would like to do like RNA sequence for, you know, whatever, like that's dumb. So be realistic about like what you can achieve depending on the state you're at. And then we can do these bigger scale projects. But generally, it's good to have little bites, big bite, medium bites and big bites. So things are always in process and you're going to have some projects. Like, for example, Jennifer, it sounds like you've moved along really important stuff, but you may not see fruition now. But in 5 years, you're going to have this incredible thing. It's good to have a little bit of all that. And I think with Needy, we had that, too. Like we're still spinning off projects along the way. Some were little projects, some were big. And I think that way we both felt satisfied that we got what we needed out of that.
This is really wonderful. We are at time and I want to be respectful. So thank you all so much. We had some really great key takeaways. I think chief among them is, especially for mentees, be organized and communicative. It's really important to, and certainly encouraged and okay to come with thoughts and ideas to your mentors and these new relationships. And then I think the second large takeaway is just, you know, be really aware of how much you may or may not be communicating with your mentor and adapt to their communication preferences so that you're both getting the work out of the relationship that you need. So I want to say thank you so much to everybody. I want to especially thank Dr. Eichenfeld, who was tasked with organizing this EI webinar. So I appreciate you bringing this all together. And thank you to our wonderful trainees and to our attendings who were willing to speak about the uncomfy stuff and also share some really amazing wisdom. You guys are all doing excellent work, and this has been great. Thank you so, so much.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this podcast about maximizing relationships. If you have questions about PDRA meetings or PDRA resources, please email us at info@pdraresearch.org, or you can check us out online at www.pdraresearch.org. You can also find us on major social media channels. We are on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook, all at PDRA Research.